Hi, it's Wednesday afternoon, and let me take a look at the Parsha, which this week is Parsha Shoftim. I think I want to do this for in honor of the wedding I went to the other day of Heli and Shira Adler. It's my good friends, Josh and Mr. and Mrs. Josh Adler, Josh and Ali Adler, and marrying off their son. Both the father and the son, in this case, were students of mine at one time or another. And the Kala Shira Satovsky, I think from Pittsburgh, right? Bakim and Khan is Saras Satovsky, so mazel tov to both sides. And as they say, they should build a bayis nem b'Yisrael. Let's take a look at Parsha Shoftim, and I'll jump right into it. You know, I've made the point many times in the past that the Chumash is the opposite of the United States Constitution, because the Constitution is very clear about the separation of powers, whereas in the Chumash, it's the opposite. There's no indication what the roles are between the Shoftim and the Sanhedrin, which they described the Sanhedrin. They talk about, you know, ki polem yichod davar dar bein din ledin, and you go to the highest court, and you don't depart from what they tell you. You mean it's small. You know, it's the beginning of the parsha, and that's referring to like a Sanhedrin type situation. You think. Doesn't say so, but it says, so it sounds like a lower court can't handle it, even a capital crimes case. So you go to the highest place and follow whatever they tell you. And then you have a parsha about the king coming right after that, which I've talked about in the past. Duran famously says that the king is like a backup. In case the Torah laws don't work, use the royal law, the martial law. Knows you, like, you close down all the loopholes that you have in the Torah law, because the Torah law, as the Ron himself says, is kind of ridiculous in the sense it's not really applicable, because crime can be too easy to get away with. It's too high a bar of due process. I mean, you can't get any convictions. We all learned this when we were kids. You need to aid him, you have to have asra, and the guy has to be matar al salmitza, and all this kind of stuff. Aside from the other loopholes, which if you know how to do grumma properly, you can kill somebody and get away with it. So, with grumma. So, why are the laws like that? So Iran, if you remember famously, I talked about before, says that if everybody's nicey-nice, then you follow the regular laws. But if not, then you follow the king's laws. Okay, I mean, that's a theory. Okay, now the Iran is the Iran, so it's a sheet of the Rishonim, which it is. Notice it's his opinion. But it ain't in the Chumash, meaning you wouldn't know it just by looking at it. So it's kind of confusing, it seems to me. And what's really interesting is Tzedek Tirdof, which I just looked up. See if anybody says anything. Not really. I mean, I know the Chazals and all the rest, and I believe I've done them in the past. So let me get right to it. Here's Moshe Rabbeinu. This is funny, by the way. This is Dvarim at the end of his life. 40 years you were in the desert telling the Jews to get ready for being in Eretz Yisrael. For 40 years you never discussed how you're going to run the place? Nor is it clear how he runs the place. As we all know, Moshe died without a successor, except Yehoshua, who was a temporary successor. So it's not like when you get to Israel, have a constitutional convention, you know, the different tribes should agree upon, through consensus, some kind of system of government, and then follow that system of government. Lamashal, they should all make a king, right? But don't say, it says if you come to Israel and you want a king, here's how you do it, which is the Avraham Avinu famously says, shows you that a king is b'dieved. So, you know, you get what I'm saying. Now, let me get right down to this. When you look at this parsha, at least when I look at the parsha, you think about the concept of law, courts and law, which is your classic form of nonviolent conflict resolution. Every society has some kind of a court system, some kind of a law. By definition, society, the definition of a society is several things. One of them is that they have rules. Okay, otherwise not a society. They might be barbaric rules. They might be enlightened rules. They might be discriminatory rules. Whatever, don't matter. But you got some kind of rules. And the idea behind that is social contract. So if I want to be able to walk on the streets, I have to have some kind of system of law and courts. You'll tell me in America, it's not safe to walk on the streets in a lot of places. That's a tie-in on the law system, right? I live in Baltimore. You live wherever you live. There's a lot of parts of Baltimore I can't walk in. Not if I want to be safe. Shouldn't be like that. Should be I can walk anywhere in the middle of the night and so on and so forth. It ain't like that. So that's a tie in the law system. How do you fix it? Now, here's the thing. The idea behind law, it's associated with justice. But I always say there's justice and justice. There's justice with a capital J. There's justice with a small case J. What's the difference? Justice with a capital J is a high ideal. You're getting at the truth. Tzedek. Righteousness. The courts in their rulings and the laws in their formation reflect the highest ideals of the way things should be. So in other words, you hurt me, you pay a price. That's just. You get it? You didn't hurt me, you don't pay a price. That's also just. You see? That you hurt me and you don't pay a price, that's not just. Or you didn't hurt me and nevertheless you pay a price, that's not just. That's using the word just in the sense of righteous, correct, proper. All right? So associate that with a certain right way to be. But that's an ideal. There never was and never will be a society like that where the courts always get it right or 99% of the time get it right. The courts don't make mistakes. The laws don't have inequities in them of one form or another. The definition of inequities may change over the centuries. So once upon a time, racial discrimination in this country was okay and then it wasn't, you know, for example. And, because notions change. But is it just, as it's described to the highest ideals? Where do you find a case like that? On the other hand, there's the other type of justice with a lowercase j. And that's the basic idea of law and order, meaning the courts will get it right, the courts will get it wrong, but you need courts, you need a police, you need something. Did a police ever screw up? Yeah. But what do you want to do? Like these idiots, defund the police? You know, that'll make it better. You do it the best you can. You always try to fine tune it. You try to improve things. If you see deficiencies, you try to supply them. If you see reforms that are necessary, you try to introduce them. But you need something. So a bad law system is better than no law system. Okay? Now, that's not justice as a high ideal. The system may be flawed in many ways. You know, once upon a time, long ago, a couple hundred years ago, the law was very savage. And it reflected the power relationships of the capitalists 200-300 years ago. So for stealing an apple, like in Les Miserables, you know, you become an abbot for the rest of your life or something like that. Or for, doing something, chop off your hand. Law is savage. And that's because in a capitalist society, when it's run by the riches, they want to make it Lotignov is like the number one thing because I want my property protected, right? I get it. But whatever the flaws were, and you can read Charles Dickens on this sort of thing, whatever the flaws were, it worked. What do I mean when I say it worked? What do I mean when I say it worked? I mean, you could walk on the street. You know, it wasn't Ishes Reichim Blaohu. Crime was kept to a certain bearable minimum. If you did something that a rich person like you got sent away to Australia, all right, so, you know, there were some tough aspects to it. I get it. But society could function. People could have property. You could sleep at night without worrying about somebody's going to come in and kill you or something like that. That's the low case. That's the justice with the small j. That's the absolute necessity in the society. In every society, including the Torah society, you have to have some kind of a justice system so that there's, you know, ruba de ruba, there's a price to pay if somebody does something wrong. Or if you and I have a fight, there's some way to settle it. It may be that the courts will paskin wrong, and everybody knows that happens. There's whole kind, even in Torah law, you could paskin wrong. You think every basin gets it right? Baloney. As a matter of fact, the Chumash talks about that. They have Hurias, Masechtas Hurias. If the Sanhedrin messes up, the Sanhedrin no less, Kal v'chomer, a smaller court, and Asher Nasi Yechtah, the king could screw up. Everybody can mess up. It's already a madrega for a court to say we messed up. Usually the courts will hide it. You understand? That's the way it goes. So you're not going to really find in any court system, including the Torah's, justice with a capital J. Only God can do that. But you try. You can't simply say, I'm cynical, therefore the heck with the whole thing, and I'll just follow my interest. I'll take a bribe. I'll do whatever. You know, however, whether a bribe of kesef, a bribe of something else, whatever the case is, that's not good. That's what God hates. God cannot expect you to always get it right. But, and because of that, we have this rule, lo sosa yamina small. You have to follow whatever the Sanhedrin says to the right or the left. And, you know, there's chazals that say, even if you tell you left is right and right is left, what does that mean? No, you know they're wrong, right? Even if you know they're wrong. But you have to follow somebody. If somebody says like this, I don't agree with the psak of the court, therefore I'm not going to obey it, then there's no point to having the court. Then it's called the Olin Gvar, you know, just whoever's stronger will grab it. And society will turn into a jungle. That's all. Survival of the fittest. It won't be pretty. Won't be pretty, but okay, that's what it is. So now where I'm coming at is, I think tzedek, tzedek tirdof is very interesting. What does tzedek mean? Tzedek really, really, really means righteousness, that is to say, law applied in the right way. There was a guy who did a crime, and he got caught, and he got tried, and he got the appropriate sentence. You get it? He didn't get away with it. It wasn't too harsh beyond what his crime was. It wasn't less harsh. It was just right, like Goldilocks. You understand? It was just right. Somebody hurt someone else, he doesn't get away with it. On the other hand, they tried to frame somebody, but in the court process, the Drisha B'Chakira, it turned out that the court discovered that the guy was being framed. That's the right way it should be. So you get at the truth, you see? You get at the truth. But, you know, only in the old Perry Mason shows you get the truth. How do you know it's the truth? The courts do their best. So that's tzedek. And the Ron says, I remember this. It's a long Drush's Ron. Now the art scroll has it all translated in English. So I think they did both volumes. So if you're interested in what I'm talking about, and it didn't get you last year or 2 years ago, whenever I spoke about it last, check out the Drush's Ron on this Parsha, because one of them was, as far as me, myself, and I, as far as I'm concerned, it's the most famous of the Drush's Ron. In my opinion, where he talks about the concept of the shoftim and the king and all the rest of it. And he wants to make the case that there's Torah law and then there's the king's law. The Torah law is shoftu asam mishpat tzedek. Because the Torah says shoftu asam mishpat tzedek. So the Torah laws are mishpat tzedek, they're righteous laws, meaning they follow the real proper way. It's justice with a capital J. Masha ain't king, the king's laws are martial law. So let's say there's a riot going on, and law and order is broken down, and we send in the army, and it's a hefkeris. They start shooting, baby, right? And they'll mow down a whole bunch of people until the violence goes away and the rioting stops. Did they shoot any innocent people along the way? Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. This goes on throughout history. When the army or somebody send in because there's a hefkeris going on, innocent people suffer. But martial law says it's the price necessary to pay to restore law and order. It'll get worse if you don't. You see? That's the theory behind it. In America, they do that. It's called a martial law. And, oh my goodness, in the Civil War, my, yeah. And this is how it goes, okay? It's part of war. See, war involves the death of innocent people. It shouldn't be deliberate, but it does always involve the death of innocent people. It's one of the things it involves. Now, that's, the Ron says, that's, you know, the king's law. But if it's the Torah law, it's a mishpat tzedek. Problem is, it doesn't work. Because a Bezin can get it wrong. I know Bezin, me, myself, and I know Bezins have gotten it wrong sometimes. I'm not going to go into their dirty details. And chances are, some of you listening podcasts, you know cases like that also. It's sad, it can happen. You understand? Matter of fact, I think I saw once, either it was a Kedusha Slavey or the Noam Elimelech, one of those two. It's, I have the black two books next to me, and she'll believe it or not. I don't look at it too often because it has nekudos, you know me. And I think it was a Noam Elimelech, but maybe it was the other one. And he says, you know, if you know, the defendant, let's say, or whoever, the litigant, that the Bezin Paskin wrong, Right? Let's assume it's Kedusha Slavi. So you're a Baal Din, and you know that you were in the right. But by the time the court finished, the Beis Din now, they found for the other guy. So you bet some, so you're Makabal, you know, like, okay, you're Makabal the Din, what can you do? And you know yourself, though, that it's not right. You're not challenging their authority, but you know it's not right. So he says, what's the pshat? How do you square that with the fact that it's supposed to be Mishpat Tzedek? So I think Kedusha Levi, he said, well, it's a Gilgul thing. You know, you messed up in another life, and now in this Gilgul, you're paying for it. Shkoyach, if that's what it is, Achavei, meaning then there's no justice in the life that I'm living right now. The Gilgul means you take a long, you know, view of the thing, and what was I may have messed somebody over up in the 1500s, and now I'm living in the 2000s, I have to pay for it here. Okay, you know, I mean, if it's true, it's true. I get it. But it doesn't sit well. It doesn't sound like, you know, Mishpat Tzedek. But what's that whole word about? Because the Kedusha Levi was dying, among other things, and he knows the way it is, and he sees this happen and that happen, and maybe he himself was the victim of Beza, I don't know. And how do you explain it theologically? Unless you say it's Martin Gilgal. You know? So that whole shot that he's giving is one which acknowledges like the flaws that are inherent in any judicial system. Right? Only if somebody has Ruach HaKodesh Mamish, you know, can they get it right? And you can't have a judge with Ruach HaKodesh. That's the antithesis. In the Jewish religion, we say a Navi is one thing and a Dayan is something else. And a Navi shouldn't play as being a Dayan, a Dayan shouldn't play as being a Navi. Even though there were some people who held both hats, wore both hats. Now, Zelya Navi, at one time or another, was a Dayan in his capacity as the biggest Talmud Chacham this time. At least that's the way the Rambam puts it. But when he was doing the Vua, no, Eliyahu HaNavi didn't say like this, oh, I see a plaintiff and a defendant, I can smell that the plaintiff is right, and therefore he wins. You're in trouble if you do that. So you're not supposed to do that. Right? That's in the halacha. But that's the only way you know for sure. You see? That's the only way you know for sure. So, being human, I'm a judge, I have two litigants in front of me, sooner or later, if they want a din, I'm going to find for one or the other. I'm doing my best. I gave it my best shot. I'm an honest person. And I found for Reuven over Shimon, or Shimon over Reuven. And I prayed that I got the right one. Right? You can't know. I prayed that I got the right one. So, Niran says, Mishpat Tzedek. Not Mishpat Tzedek in the sense of Tzedek in with a capital J. You strive for that, but there's no way that you can assure yourself of that. Seems to me, anyway, best I can think. And so it's just funny, poignant. The Moshe Tzedek Tzedek Tirdov. Right? This is a speech from Moshe Rabbeinu. Tzedek Tzedek Tirdov. What does that mean? Tirdov is a funny Lashon. Why doesn't it say Tzedek Tzedek Ta'aseh? Right? Tzedek Tzedek Tishbot. That should be the operative verb, shouldn't it? You should do righteousness, or you should execute righteousness judicially through Mishpat or something like that. Tirdof means you chase it. You pursue it. Oh my goodness, how many sermons have we heard? Justice. Excuse me. Justice, justice shalt thou pursue. But how do you pursue justice? Even though in English we have such a thing called the pursuit of justice. But what does that mean? How do you pursue justice? It's not a thing. Do you chase it? The answer is, you strive for it. Right? You strive for it. You'll never quite get it for sure. Right? You may be lucky and give a psak, which is on target and is exactly the right way. And then you got it right and God was on your side and everything is great. But another time, not like that. That's the way it goes. Another time, not like that. And so, what do I do if I'm a Dayan, the way Moshe Rabbeinu is putting it up in Parshas Shoftim? I stay away from bribes. I stay away from corruption. I lusata mishpat, you know, I stay away from favoritism to the degree that I'm capable of doing that. I'm not a superhuman. Every judge is a human being to the degree I'm capable of doing it. In Jewish history, we have a funny situation in which the communities were always small, or very, very often small. So you couldn't really have the judicial distance that we like to think about when we think, for example, the American or Anglo-Saxon law system. A judge where I live, most people, most time, don't know who the judge is. And he's a distant figure. And, you know, he's not going to be your next door neighbor, Ruba. And so he has this sort of like authority of distance. I'm coming in front of this judge. He doesn't know me. I don't know him. That's what he's supposed to be. And I hope to make the right impression of him and present the right arguments to my lawyer and all the rest of it. But what if the whole town was 100 people and I know the judge because he's my customer? Maybe he's a customer of the other guy also, but I know the judge and he knows me. And I actually shoveled the snow for him once. And I did a carpool for him once, all the rest of it. It's sort of like impossible. You understand? It's impossible for the judge to, how should I put it? It's impossible, you know, to be totally neutral, right? Because I know this guy. I see him in the shul. Me and the judge died in the same shul. That's how it was throughout our history. The Noda Behuda didn't die with people in a minyan. The Shagasari didn't down people in a minyan. The Rambam, the Ramah, Rabbi Yonah Nasi, all these people. You didn't have that kind of distance. And when you don't have the distance, I don't know. And when I say I don't know, that's a statement of fact. I don't know how you maintain your judicial distance and not have any negias whatsoever. I just don't know. But tzedek tzedek terdof, you pursue it. You try. You chase it. And like every ideal, you don't reach it, but life consists of chasing the ideal. As I always say, raise your hand if you're a perfect spouse. Raise your hand if you're a perfect parent or a perfect child. And we'll see how many liars there are, right? But you try, and a normal person tries his best to be the best father he can be, I would hope, right? Maybe get it right, maybe get it wrong. A good spouse, let's say a husband, for example, in a normal marriage, in a functional, not a dysfunctional situation, tries his best to be the best husband he can be. The wife tries to be the best wife they can be. Do we mess up? We screw up along? Of course people make mistakes. That's part of being a human being. But you try. That's terdof. You chase it. So tzedek, tzedek, terdof. To me, tzedek, tzedek is a phrase. There's tzedek, and then there's tzedek, tzedek. Tzedek means justice with a small j. If I'm in a community, there has to be a judge. What's the halacha? You take the best judge you can get. Even Roe Bakar, they talk about in the Gemara. Take the best judge you can get. Like they talk about, you know, who dons for the Yamanan or Rosh Yom Kippur. What's it in Shulchan Aruch? You need this, you need this. But at the end of the day, you take the best you can get. Right? Take the best you can get. What else can you do? Shoftim, Yishotim, Titzim, B'chol Sharecha. Not every shire has great people in it. You take the best you can get. Okay, the best you can get is going to make a mistake. That's tzedek. Because even if the guy's a loser, you need somebody to be a judge, and you need somebody that hopefully everybody will listen to. And if everybody listens to it, you have a possibility of a functioning society. Sometimes I lose, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes I win. And we all know it. And, you know, maybe complain, but we follow it. And that way, we don't have constant physical clashes. That's tzedek. But tzedek, tzedek is like kosher. It's not just kosher, it's kosher. So tzedek, tzedek means you got it mamish, emes lamito, you got it right. So that the judges were able to discern whether the plaintiff or the defendant was right. Which of the two litigants was right. They were able, through their judicial ability, through their skill at cross-examination, their reading of people's faces, I don't know, whatever it takes to get it right. That's terdof. That's something you chase, you pursue as an ideal. You don't necessarily get there. Because the same judge that got it right on target today will probably mess up a week from now when he gets another case. It's how humans are. You understand? So I think here's Moshe Rabbeinu Biruv Yomov about to die, and he sent the Jews, sent him up to go into Israel, as we know. And that itself was a hard enough task. He never got around to telling them how they should run the business. Here you are, 12 tribes, 13 tribes, whatever. You're going to, after I'm gone, Moshe says, you're going to go into Israel. Each of them will take possession of their territory because, you know, they had divided up or they've been given instructions how to set up a lottery system and divide up the land. But then what do you do? It doesn't say in the Torah. Then what do you do? Once they take over the land, how do they run it? Moshe left no instructions on that, other than Shoftim, Shoftim, Tinzel, Chol Sharecha. Right? That should be local judges. Now, what happened to Lamaisa? What happened to Pirat Shoftim, for example? When the Jews came to Israel, did they have a king? No, we all know that. There was no king. So you'll tell me, well, there was a Sanhedrin. Okay, I got no problem with that, but it never mentions it in the book of Shoftim. Or I think in the rest of the Tanakh, if I'm not mistaken. Can't think of it. There's no mention of the of a Sanhedrin, of a Supreme Court, you know, sitting and associating with the Mishkan. There's no transnational kind of court that all the tribes went to, that we see. We know the theory, but I say you don't see it in the book of Shoftim, which was 300 and some years, and 350. And did you have local courts? You assume that they did. I don't know about that. I always say like this. The way you get the impression from reading Sefer Shoftim in the first part of Shmuel is you had a patriarchal society. And basically, if I live in the territory, if I live in the territory of Shimon, I only interact with people of Shimon most of the time. I'm a farmer. I don't deal with others. So the guy that messes me up, the guy that I had a fight with at the parking lot is a relative, somebody from Shimon. If I'm in Menashe, I'm going to get into a fight with somebody else from Menashe. How am I getting into a fight with somebody from Reuven? I mean, it's possible. Of course it's possible. And maybe somebody did a big business deal. But Ruba de Ruba, most of the fights were within the tribe. And therefore, they will settle out of court. I can't guarantee it. In that kind of society, you go to the elders of that tribe. You know, Bubby this, Zadie this, Uncle that, whatever it is. And they'll settle it. And they don't have to go by the Torah law. You understand? They're going to go by what they see. And it worked because people listened. So if you are in the tribe of Ephraim, for example, and there was some person that was considered the Zaken of Ephraim, or a group of people called Zikne Ephraim, they'll tell you which of the two litigants wins. And it doesn't matter whether they get it literally right in the higher sense of justice. People listen to them, that's enough. You understand? That's enough. They could, function. The issue was settled in court, and now you move weiter. And if the loser wants to do something bad, I'll take him again to court. But it was a tribal court. So if you don't listen, there'll be all kinds of sanctions that'll make it unpleasant for you, so you'll listen. Okay. So there probably wasn't too many Beis Din situations in those days. If a case between two people in a frame actually came to a Beis Din, a Shoftim, Meshoftim, Tinam, Chol Sharecha situation, you'd have to wonder, why was that? Why couldn't it be settled in-house among the family members? When I say the family members, the wider family members. That's what I think. So what happened when eventually set up a king situation with Shaul and David and Shlomo and so forth? I don't know. We do see references in, I remember, with, what's the name? Yehoshaphat, for example, and maybe Chizkiah or something, that, they talked about having judges and going around and telling everybody not to take bribes. Here and there, you see such a thing. But was it run on that system? Or was it run tribalistically? And if it ended up in court, how come the Zakenim system didn't work? Informal system. I don't know the answer. They're very fascinating questions. Somebody asked me today, actually, to class. And it goes to show you, look at Tzedek Tzedek Terdov. It's not simply, Tzedek Tzedek Terdov. Be nice. Justice thou shalt pursue. Pursuit of justice means you're always chasing it. You never quite get it. Right? But life consists of going after high ideals, even though you know you'll never reach perfection. Now we're in the month of Elul. Raise your hand if you think you're perfect. Right? The whole Jewish religion, the religion in general, is based on the idea people will never be perfect. They may do better sometimes, they may do less sometimes, but there's always backsliding, there's always new affairs. The Yitzhar never goes to sleep, as they say. Right? You can't say, I triumphed with the Yitzhar last year, therefore I have nothing to worry about next year. It's not true. So courts and judiciary and all the rest of it play a kind of funny role in all this. Anyway, this seems to me the complex reality behind Parsha Shoftim. Again, I want to wish the two families, Josh Adler and family, and the Sitomskis, and you know, and the new marriage, and the young couple should build, as I say before, Bais Nem Yisrael. The Adlers have a very good reputation in town, so the young people have to work hard to keep up the reputation.